face-to-face at the Flamingo in Laughlin, Nevada, of all places.
Yeah, at the convention here. I think it's the 11th annual, 12th annual UFO convention. Gets better every year. People are having a great time.
And you're actually getting out here and meeting a few folks. So you were telling me you've been in the car for a little while.
Yeah, I started a car trip out of Las Vegas throughout all the West here, meeting with colleagues, friends of friends, friends of colleagues, and so forth, making some contacts with producers and publishers and so forth to try to build a sense of relationship for the coming activities of this year and next year. I've been behind a computer for 7 years doing the activism outside Washington, D.C., but you can only go so far relationship-wise in email. You really need to get out and talk to people first, face-to-face.
You know, there's nothing replaces face-to-face meetings, and you really... and I hope, I guess, the UFO community is beginning to support your works in Washington. You're doing some pretty good things.
Well, we've certainly had support over the years. XPAC has received donations, Political Action Committee, but it's not a great deal. Nobody in this field is oversupported. Everyone is operating generally with their own monies and with very limited budgets, which is not good because the implications of the issue, namely the presence of extraterrestrials, the management of the issue, and the UFO cover-up, are so huge, global in their impact, that something of magnitude really needs to have a lot more support. And that's the transition that's underway now. People believe in this issue. They're polling at this issue at 50%, even higher on certain questions like, is the government telling the truth? 90% don't think they are. We need to translate that awareness and the sense of the public to monetary funding that will allow this activism to go forward, the advocacy go forward, so that we can get the truth about this subject out. And that's kind of what I'm involved in now, talking to people and laying that kind of groundwork.
Now, when we first were visiting on the air the first time, the Disclosure Project was just about to happen, and then I talked to you a little bit afterwards. You still feel that there will be some disclosure sometime fairly soon, last time I talked to you.
Well, the congressional campaign that was run in Maryland was an advocacy campaign designed to cross a major threshold, and that was for the first time to have someone actually on a ballot in November in a congressional race that was talking about the ET presence and the government truth embargo. It's never happened before. We accomplished that. We got on the ballot. We were in 5 debates, got some coverage. The local press were very effective in stonewalling me, but nevertheless, we did get coverage nationally and then some local. So we accomplished that, but... It's not enough. Move it this way. The message of that campaign still stands, that the best window of opportunity the government has had since 1947, that famous year, to end the cover-up, bring out the fundamental truth to the public, and sort of enter the new paradigm, as I like to call it, is this year, 2003. They have the president, the military intelligence complex has a president much to their liking. He has a very powerful pedigree to his father. They have a very high approval ratings. They have very strong people in all key positions. The public awareness is very high. Cold War is over. The world's still a messy place. If they don't do it now, they certainly can't do it next year, an election year, presidential election year, which means they have to put it off till 2005. And frankly, can they be certain that someone that they kind of like will win that election? Perhaps someone they don't like, or a Democrat, for instance, will win that election. So if they don't do it, and then they'll have to either hold it under a Democratic administration. Keep in mind, the military intelligence community is overwhelmingly Republican. Or they're going to have to try to hold it off until what? 2009? I don't think so. So this is really their best opportunity, and I think if they can get some of these issues like Iraq neutralized and maybe North Korea free the decks, they would still be able to do it this year. That's my belief, and that's what I try to tell the public and also convey that message to the Congress and to the government. Look, take advantage of this opportunity. We're not gonna bite. Come out, tell the truth. I think the public will embrace it, and I think we'll have a very positive response, and we'll move forward together.
Been banging around Washington visiting for some time and know quite a few people, and not only in the political circles themselves but behind the scenes. How about these military people that seem to know something about this? Is there a move there? Do they really want it to reveal, or is there two different camps and are fighting, or what?
it's assumed that inside government there are those opposed to disclosure now and those in favor of it now. I think that's a given. But we don't have briefing papers or direct evidence of this. This is a calculated, educated guess. There are certainly lots of indicators that there's movement, what I call pre-disclosure indicators, pre-positioning. Lots of things. I mean, we could spend a lot of time talking about that. And let's not forget that the majority, well, most of the key witnesses that have come forward in the last 10 years with substantial testimony that's very confirmatory confirming of the ET presence or the cover-up, collectively speaking, are all military. Military or agency people, controllers, even high-level ranking officers. So clearly, if there are people that are actually coming forward publicly and talking about this who have worked for the government, some career officers, there's got to be a lot of people that are still in government that haven't retired yet that are of a similar mind but not in a position to do anything, but yet their sympathies are toward getting back in the truth business on the subject.
Let's go back to your business at hand here, the 12th Annual UFO Conference, and this is just one of your many stops. How about, you mentioned producers and people like that, press contact, et cetera. Are they pretty open to what you're talking to them about?
Well, in general, I'm talking to the ones that are open about it. I'm not talking to the ones that aren't open. I'm a big fan of the documentarists, like James Fox and Tim Coleman and Chris Toussaint, and we have a new fellow in town, Robert Nickel, who has done a great documentary, Star Dreams, and Kevin Barry. There's so many. This is the age of video information. People, reading a book is kind of tedious. The documentaries keep coming. The quality gets better. These people are telling the story, showing the evidence. Absolutely essential. So these are some of the producers. There's also, and I met with Paul Davids, who's one of the most famous producers of material in the genre, if only because of his movie Roswell, which was the Showtime movie with Kevin McLaughlin. Of course, Paul's never left the field. He's always doing something related to it along with his other work. I've been meeting with some of the researchers here. I've already had several interesting meetings about things I didn't know that were going on. There's going to be more before Sunday. Laughlin, for me, I've never been asked to speak here, but I come because I get more done here in a week in terms of interacting and learning what's going on than just about any other week of the year. It's like a convention. It's like any other field. When the people of knowledge come together, it's the meetings behind the scenes that are probably more important than the presentations going on in the ballroom. And that will continue to be the case, not only here, but at major events like the UFO Expo and the Bay Area, which is held every fall now, September. And I'll be there at that one as well. So the trip is going very well, and this trip has certainly been this conference has been a highlight.
Now, you said you're going to New Mexico, or you've already been there? You mentioned Roswell. I wanted to ask you, are you going to Roswell?
Not going to Roswell, but I did visit New Mexico, spent some time with Richard Hoagland. In fact, interestingly enough, I was at Richard Hoagland's place and had just gotten up that morning when, of course, the tragedy occurred, the NASA shuttle tragedy, which is kind of an odd kind of coincidence, because Richard is famous for being an activist, a science activist in dealing with NASA. I may be going back to New Mexico for an important meeting. Then I'll be going on to the Conscious Living Expo in Los Angeles. There's some good meetings there. But interestingly enough, on the way down from the Tahoe area on this trip, right, instead of coming the short way, I took the long way, went north of Area 51, went through Ratio. I've never been there. Stopped in a little alien inn and had a country fried steak sandwich, if I'm not mistaken. Saw the photos on the wall and all the great UFO shots, some great UFO shots, including people. And as it was, that I was there at exactly the time that George Bush gave the State of the Union address. So I sat in the little alien in Rachel, Nevada, watching the president give the State of the Union address. And once again, sadly enough, there was no mention of extraterrestrial presence regarding the State of the Union.
He probably wouldn't. How would you like to see the president roll that out? And say, oh, by the way, we have extraterrestrials. You know.
Well, it wouldn't be in the State of the Union, that's for sure. The government needs to call a major press conference. The president will announce that it's significant and important. Might not even mention the topic from the Oval Office. This is not. He would not be at the conference itself. This would be to depoliticize it, departisanize it. And then you'd shift to a major conference with about 20 or 30 people at a long table, members of NASA, members of military, members of public sector, State Department, as well as some religious leaders, major scientists, and so forth. There'd be a moderator, somebody notable, who would then open up by indicating what the press conference is about. Yes, the government is now able to, after many years of examination, research, and what have you, able to tell the public that, in fact, there is an extraterrestrial presence. They know about it. And for national security purposes, it was not something they could share with us. They're going to share with that now and answer as many questions as possible with the understanding that some things still remain national security matters. That's the press conference they need to hold. They need to do it this year. And that's roughly how I would think it would go.
You know, we were in Gallup on our way here when the Columbia tragedy happened. You were in New Mexico at Richard Holdren's place. You said he's had a long history, as you say, with NASA over the years, battling back and forth. And what was his reaction?
Well, he was upset, of course. He is always. Actually, Richard Hoagland is a big fan of NASA. A lot of people don't know this. They think he hates NASA. He doesn't hate NASA. He loves NASA. He loves the space program. And the issue is that he wants the space program to be the space program, to be able to explore space without being fettered by all the national security problems centered around extraterrestrial artifacts, evidence, and implications. All of that, legally, under the 1958 Space Act, is controlled by the DOD. NASA can do nothing there without DOD approval. And so NASA's been in a conflicted position for its entire existence, going back to 1958. And it's made it very tough on them. Maybe it was necessary in the 50s, 60s, 70s. It's now time to free NASA of this burden and allow it to explore space and show everything that it finds to us, excite us about the incredible things that are out there, which includes extraterrestrials as well as ancient artifacts, I believe, on Mars. And so he's just as saddened as anybody that they've had this terrible tragedy and unnecessary lives are lost. But it's an interesting point. From my point of view, there's a major issue here. I am convinced, along with a lot of other people, that the ET technology does exist in the confines of government, and that some of it has been transferred to the commercial marketplace, which is fine, to help advance technological change. But the tech, if we have the energy and the power systems, they have not been transferred, probably because to do so, to make them in any way relatively apparent, would break the cover-up open. They can't do that. So, and there's film of what looked like government craft being operated and tested, craft that operate using technology not terrestrial, meaning probably anti-gravitic in some way. If that technology exists, if in fact we could be taking astronauts up to that space station without using, you know, chemical rockets, then literally astronauts are dying because the cover-up does not permit technology to be fully engaged. And that raises the question, how much cost are we willing to incur to maintain the cover-up, and when shouldn't it be ended now? So that's what was going through my mind as I learned about the astronauts.
Good point there, and that's something we all were bringing out. Stephen Bassett is our guest. This is Jerry Pippin. We're broadcasting here from Laughlin, the UFO conference, international conference, and film festival. And Stephen, before we let you go here tonight, let's talk a little bit about your XPAC and funding and things like that. You have a good cause, and people in the UFO community, they need to say help. We need all the help we can get in Washington. So if somebody wants to support you money-wise or support-wise, just pat you on the back or anything, I guess the best way is to go to the website or what?
Well, the website certainly is the easy way. It has a contribution section there, and people can actually contribute by credit card. There's also a mailing address. But not everybody's on the web, so let me give it out. XPAC, which is X-PPAC, Extraterrestrial Phenomena Political Action Committee. Contributions from American citizens only, not corporations, no greater than $5,000 by law, can be mailed to XPAC at 4938 Hampton Lane, number 161, Bethesda, Maryland, B-E-T-H-E-S-D-A, Maryland, 20814. That's 4938 Hampton, H-A-M-P-D-E-N Lane, number 161, Bethesda, Maryland, 20814. But in with respect to new projects, we have a new one. It's called Citizen Hearing. There's a website already up called citizenhearing.org. The initial sponsors, the two initial sponsors, we hope to get many more, are Paradigm Research Group, the lobbying entity that I set up, and XPAC. And citizen hearing is simple. If we can raise sufficient funds, around $200,000, we will hold a week-long hearing in Washington, D.C., modeled exactly after real congressional hearings, with former members of the House and Senate sitting those hearings, with some staff assistance and legal assistance to both sides, aides and so forth, all the bells and whistles, audience, full camera coverage, to take the testimony of the best 30 or so witnesses out there, mostly military agency people, with respect to their experiences and with events and evidence on ET reality. And the motto of the citizen hearing is, if the Congress won't do its job, the public will. This would be a significant event, and there's been a great response to it. It's a wonderful idea, very doable. The logistics are straightforward. Only the money is necessary to do it right, because it has to be done right. It can't be half-baked. It's got to be a fully baked operation. And so we're talking about a lot of people being flown in, being put up, and the surroundings being proper. So the citizen hearing is the new project, hopefully to try to do it this year. We're looking for sponsors. We're looking for some high-level people that would like to serve on the board of advisors, people with government legal research background. And, of course, we're looking for supporters. We're looking for people that can introduce us or arrange meetings with former members of the House and Senate to discuss being on the committee. And certainly people that would arrange meetings with perhaps individuals of substantial wealth who maybe a single person could come forward and fund the entire thing. The key is getting it done. It would be great if thousands and thousands of people would support it with $10 or $20. Wonderful. It would be more populist. But the fact is we need to get it done. And so if someone can step forward with the basic funding, then we'd move ahead. And we could probably, if the funding was in our hands next week, we could probably have something out in at least 3 months. But for right now, I'm out meeting with people about the board, about sponsorship, about funding, and it's just been out for about 3 weeks. But the website's up, very straightforward, citizenhearing.org.
Fantastic. Now, when you mix an interview and intermingle with former politicos, for the lack of a better term, a former congressman, former senators, whatever, I know in your business you do meet these people a lot. I guess what I'm asking, is there an attitude change once they're out? Would they be more likely to come forward on something like this once they're no longer serving?
Well, if you're talking about former members of the House and Senate, what's cool about the citizen hearing idea is that when real hearings are held in Congress, the people sitting up there are politicians. And they have all kinds of constraints on them. And they got to answer to their party's platform. They got to answer to their funders. They got to worry about getting reelected. And they can't take off the gloves. A lot of these hearings are kind of almost orchestrated events designed to sort of get a position out there. Former members of the House and Senate, however, even though the setting would be exactly the same, and they would act and conduct themselves as if they were in a real hearing, they don't have those constraints. They're not worried about being reelected. And so I think we would have a much more intense questioning, a much more open proceeding, and it would be much freed up. So a lay could be superior to the real thing, and well and good. So that's something I particularly like about this. In terms of them willing to do it, one of the key things here is those that are going to be asked to they're simply being asked to come forward and do their role as a former member of Congress and listen to the testimony along with the rest of the public, okay, and ask the tough questions as if they were gathering information to make public policy. They're able to take a fully neutral view. They're providing a service. They're gathering information. So they don't take a position on ETs, but rather simply do their job, or what their job would have been were they still in the Congress. I don't think this is too much to ask. I think people could. And so if the information brought out actually seems to show that maybe there's nothing to this, then they've done the public a great service. And if it turns out that it confirms what we already know to be true, the ETs are in fact present, then they've done a great public service. They really can't lose.
You were talking about maybe one person being able to write the check for the whole thing. I was talking to our marketing person today, Roberta Scott, and she was talking to me about some demographic information, and we have some pretty high-income people that check our website, so maybe somebody will spring, please.
Well, let me put it this way. Anybody out there who has the kind of money where pretty much everything they need in this life is taken care of, but they'd like to make a difference. You know, when you give money to political parties, it just gets spread and smeared around, and it's part of that whole milieu of, you know, who's in power, who's not in power. we're at a junction in the world right now where political events of the highest magnitude are about to take place. One of the biggest events in history is almost at our doorstep. Whoever steps forward in this arena now, they'll be talking about this person 500 years from now. I mean, this is a rare opportunity to make political impact of a magnitude far exceeding anything one would normally think of. So I'm hoping someone will see that and go, wow, that would be fun. I'm going to help open up the cover-up. I'm going to help bring the truth to the American people. I'm going to change the political landscape for a couple hundred thousand dollars. Well, I spent that on my last vacation to Tahiti, right? So it's like, and that's fine. Look, America makes money better than any nation in the world. We've got 19-year-olds walking around with millions of dollars in their pocket. Fabulous. I support it. I'm a capitalist. Now the question is, what are you going to do with it once you've got it? Here's one possibility that could be very intriguing.
Stephen Bassett, interesting concept. We have this on the website, folks. All of the websites that he was talking about, including the citizenhearing.org. And, you know, if you bought into what he said, which it makes sense to me, if I had a couple hundred grand, I'd do it right now. And I do know people, and I know you do, Stephen, that you know, spend it for lunch, but it doesn't take them long to do that, and they just kind of throw it away. So this is something they could really do and do something worthwhile.
Certainly, but we're also looking for support from everyone. As many people that can participate, whatever the amount, they're going to be part of history. We're not the only program in town. There are other groups, Disclosure Project, and other advocacy groups that also need support. So I'm not saying that this is a one, you know, the way to be all end all. But certainly this is something that has a lot of appeal. We think the citizen hearing could work. And those that can help, wonderful. But if it's not money, then maybe an introduction to someone else or a meeting with a former a member of Congress that is a friend of the family. Whatever. We'll piece together the Board of Advisors. We'll find these members. We'll find the funding. And unless the Congress decides to hold hearings itself, which it may very well choose to do, fine and dandy, then we'll go ahead and we'll have our own hearing in Washington in front of the cameras, and we'll let these people testify to the world in the citizen hearing.
Sounds like this, if this could really be put together, would be really earth-shaking, and I love that concept of having the people do it and having it set up like a congressional hearing, Stephen. That's very good. Before you leave, a couple of things more. First of all, you had that taste of politics. You're going to go back and try to run again?
Yeah, it was a taste of politics, all right, 0.7%, though I got the same percentage that the gubernatorial third-party candidate got, Spiro Lancaster, Libertarian. So I think it was commensurate with what you could do as a third-party person. But we didn't have a lot of money. My feeling now is this. We're keeping the campaign open. We're keeping the campaign fund open. Disclosure website, disclosure2003.net, is up there and will remain up there. Occasionally add things to it. If disclosure hasn't taken place by late summer, August, then it's possible that I'll refile and run again under a name Disclosure 2005, because there's no way they're going to hold disclosure in an election year. And do it again, hopefully do it better. But fortunately, I had the luxury of not having to worry about that for a while. The active politics, you know, the problem is the way the system is now, if you play the game the way it's supposed to be played, you become somebody you don't want to be and probably somebody we don't want to elect. And so that's one of the things I learned. But I believe that eventually the public are going to respond more to people that are playing it much more straight down the line. And I did learn some things. Do I have political expectations? I'll be honest with you. It's hard to even think in those terms. I'm an activist and an advocate. And unless I succeed, unless some of these things come about, my political future is, I think, extremely limited. However, I believe in government. And I believe that one of the most important things we can do is get more a diversity in Congress, some third-party people, some independent people. I believe we're going to have a two-party system forever. That's fine, but it's too locked up. It's too monochromatic. We need, or diachromatic, we need some spice. So who knows? Maybe down the line, if things were to go a certain way, I might get a chance to serve in that way, and that'd be fabulous. But for now, we're going to work on the Citizen Project, and we'll see where we are in about 6 months.
Master, thanks for telling us about the Citizens Project. Do you have any other breaking news for us?
Breaking news.
That you've uncovered here?
you know, nothing really profound has happened that you can kind of just grab? I mean, obviously the news is completely dominated by the war and the shuttle tragedy, but I think the sci-fi initiatives, which were begun last year, Taken, for instance, is now going to air in Britain. It's airing right now. It's going to air for the next, 8 weeks or so. Then there's going to be some documentaries run there. I think you're going to see more impact from that. There is a lot going on. There is just a lot going on that would be far more evident to people and far more impacting if we weren't in this rather difficult time with these very difficult issues with terrorism as well as the Iraq War and the controversy there. So be assured that after that settles down, some of this other stuff is going to emerge. We are on a disclosure track. I think the government ultimately must act pretty soon. The activism is moving forward. And it will get more coverage, I think, when the world is maybe a little more stable and our government's dealt with some of these issues.
It's great to see you in person, Stephen Bassett, everyone, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
All right. It's a great, I look forward to doing another show, Jerry.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Steve.